It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us once again. Good day, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
And what are we talking about today?
Nice and rainy out there.
Yeah, it is nice and rainy, isn't it? You switched microphones. Let me get that one right there. Okay. There we go. We're good.
All right. Very good.
Good morning, Ben. We're going to continue and finish up today talking about homeowner associations. Specifically today, we want to talk about restrictive covenants, kind of what they are, what the purpose is, and the enforceability of restrictive covenants.
Okay.
Again, to just lay the foundation here, Ben, you know, so many of us now live in, do you want me to take that microphone?
You're good.
Okay. So many of us now live in planned communities, subdivisions, condominiums, townhomes, you know, in residential environments where there are some restrictions and some control. Be there a homeowners association, or maybe there might not be a homeowners association, but there still are certain restrictions on the property. I think you once mentioned that that was the case where you were living.
Yeah,
that there's no association, but there are some restrictions on the property. And I know that's the case out where I am as well, next door. So that's what we're going to talk about today, kind of begin the conversation with restrictive covenants, what they are, and what makes them reasonable and enforceable or unenforceable.
Okay. I know, Wes, this is right down your alley. Yeah.
Ben, that's right. You know, we've dealt with just about every permutation of this type situation, I think, that there is. And, you know, when you deal with these kind of situations in a litigation context, and we've certainly represented a lot of homeowners associations. We've also represented a lot of homeowners in these situations. I mean, first of all, as we always say, we try to work these situations out before they become, you know, litigation matters that end up in court. But, you know, as an attorney who tries these cases and deals with these cases, then, you know, obviously what you're doing, when you're looking at your particular facts is you're really reading the cases in North Carolina from the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court, our appellate courts, that give us direction about how certain things are going to be dealt with. So, you know, you get the benefit of not only understanding exactly what your particular situation is, but you really get a very broad perspective on how our courts are going to deal with these things across the board, because, you know, you've got to, you know, synthesize these issues. You've got to analyze them based on what the court has done in different situations. So it's interesting, you know, across the state, you know, whether it's, you know, in our areas in the West, mountainous areas, golf course communities, whatever it may be, you know, how the courts have dealt with these different issues. But there's several different lines of precedent dealing with particular things that, you know, as an attorney who deals with these things, you just got them in your toolbox all the time because you deal with these all the time.
So those precedents kind of form the box that you work
they
in.
They do. And, you know, sometimes there's, you know, new issues that come up with regard to this. You know, we had the Planned Community Act that was put in years ago. And then once that was put in, then there were some cases that kind of piggybacked off that. And then the General Assembly ended up making an amendment to the Planned Community Act. So then you've got a bunch of cases that spin off of that. So, you know, anyway, what my point is you get a very broad perspective of associations and how the courts are going to deal with those. So, you know, one of the things I think that's important is that, you know, the average property owner in an association thinks of the covenants as, and the covenants, again, are the documents that restrict your use of property so that we have some continuity, some consistency, so we don't have, you know, a 800-square-foot house next to a 5,000-square-foot house. So we don't have a pink house in the neighborhood and everybody else's house is a, you know, kind of a standard
Or you don't have a convenience store in the middle of the neighborhood.
Yeah, you don't. Well, that might be more zoning, but that's correct. So, you know, one thing that folks think about, they think that though these covenants are really designed to restrict my use of my property. Well, that's not really the limit of what that's about. You know, what it's about, as I just stated, is to create that consistency. So where does the buck stop with regard to that? Well, mm-hmm. it really stops with either the board of directors or the architectural control committee, mm-hmm. Or it could be a committee that's set up in order to enforce the covenants, an enforcement committee. Because you see, when you buy into an association with covenants, then whether you know it or not, you really are expecting some enforceability so that your property values are maintained, mm-hmm. so that we don't have a situation where all of a sudden there's a lack of enforceability because of the board's not doing it. They're apathetic about it. You know, they don't care, that whatever it may be. And then we've got problems all across the association, mm-hmm. that maybe is affecting it as a whole. So that's kind of a two-way street. It's not only you have to generally, you know,
right.
comply, but the board also has to make sure, you know, within reason, mm-hmm. that there is compliance. Now, that brings us to the issue of, well, what if they don't? I mean, what right do I have as
right.
just a simple property owner in this 200 lot subdivision or whatever it may be, when the board, they're the ones who got elected.
Right.
How can I
right.
tell them what to do?
Right.
Well, there's lots of cases in North Carolina that deal with that, that deal with the situation where you have a lack of enforceability, and there's a particular statute that deals with that. It's 55A740, which is a derivative action. Mm-hmm. And basically what that does is it allows kind of the minority shareholder, the minority owner, or a group of minority owners to request the association to do whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, please enforce this provision. You haven't dealt with this issue. This issue needs to be dealt with. This has been swept under the rug, whatever it may be.
Let me yep. back up for a second.
Sure. Sure.
Covenants originate, I assume, then with the original developer.
Right.
Of the property.
Right.
And then they may be amended as these associations come along, but they have a different, pretty strict rules for amending.
Correct.
I imagine.
Correct.
Yeah. And then those are enforced by the homeowners association, the covenants.
Right.
But as well as their own rules. So some people get sometimes those mixed up. And,
right. Right. So do want to touch on those rules there in a minute, but mm-hmm. as I'm talking about the process for the derivative, yeah, you put the association on notice.
Mm-hmm.
And in the event that they don't kind of clean up their act, then you have a right to basically bring a civil action, even as a minority owner or a group of minority owners, to require their enforcement.
Right.
Okay. Within reason. I mean, we don't want to overreach here,
mm-hmm.
but also this statute regarding a derivative action allows for the recovery of your attorney's fees too. You know, basically, in the event that you prevail, that the association is not doing its job, then you really bring this action derivatively on behalf of the association.
Mm-hmm.
But you may collect, you know, your attorney's fees for having to go through that process, you know, from the statute. So
you can see how this is, could be very important. I mean, if you had a specific covenant against parking a boat in your driveway.
Right.
But the homeowner association wasn't enforced, and all of a sudden one person does it, then there's another one that does it, and somebody else does it, and then all of a sudden your covenant is pretty meaningless unless it gets enforced.
Well, you know, we want the covenant to be black and white with mm-hmm. regard to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not probably a good idea to bring a derivative claim if there's some level of interpretation.
Hmm.
Because then obviously the association is going to say, we used our best judgment. We used what's called the business judgment rule.
Right.
We didn't think that they were in violation. And that probably is a good defense.
Mm-hmm.
But if the covenants just state you can't park a trailer
mm-hmm.
in the driveway, that's pretty black and white.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So you want it to be a black and white type situation before you go through, you know, the process of that derivative. Back to rules, like you mentioned mm-hmm. a moment ago. You know, in many sets of covenants, we see language with regard to the right of the association to put in place reasonable rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that normally is limited to things dealing with the common area
mm-hmm.
as opposed to your individual
right.
property.
Right.
Now, when we're talking about your individual lot, we're going to have specific restrictions in the covenants,
mm-hmm.
like we've talked about, you know, parking a boat, trailer, or whatever it may be, RV. you know, it could be, you know, mailbox size, location.
Standard mailbox, yeah, right.
You know, it could be things about, you know, a walkway, you know, mm-hmm. to the road, what it has to be like. It could, you know, it could be, you know, a number of things. But these rules and regulations really are not supposed to pour over into those kind of restrictions. They're more of things like, you know, these are the swimming pool hours.
Mm-hmm. How many guests you can have.
Right. You have to have an adult with you at the swimming pool if you're underage, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, these type of things. Or use of the common facility, the park, you mm-hmm. know, for an event. This is the rule about how you schedule that. You know, whatever it may be. So generally what we're talking about when we're dealing with rules, again, relates to the common areas, which would be, as we talked about before, look on your plat map. It'll right. show your road, your park.
Around here might be a boat ramp.
Your boat ramp. It could be your tennis court. It could be, mm-hmm. you know, your swimming pool. It could be, you know, whatever common area, the natural area, you know, whatever
the
it may be.
The dock and the pier.
The
yeah.
dock, the pier, those type things. So that's really what those rules and regulations go to.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll take a short break. We'll come back with more in a moment with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. We invite you to call in with your questions if you like at 800-818-2255, or you can reach Kenzie on these local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us.
So, Ben, you know, we were talking about covenants, restrictions, mm-hmm. Homeowners associations, and we were talking about, you know,
you could file an action.
You can file this type of action, and we're also talking about how with covenants, they're specific in many cases, mm-hmm. but sometimes you have covenants that say something like or written something like you have to keep your property clean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Or fences may be allowed only at the discretion of the Architectural Control Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things. Well, generally speaking, our courts have indicated that if you're going to place a restriction on someone's real property, you have to be specific mm-hmm. with regard to that. But there's a niche where obviously there's some level of subjectivity in some type of situations when we are developing a homeowners association. I mean, it's kind of hard to deal with every particular situation.
Sure.
You know, maybe we're going to allow fences, but we're going to trust our architectural control committee to make a determination as to what we'll allow and what we want.
So the covenant may just defer that power to the Architectural Control Committee, but it'll have the power of a covenant to act.
That is correct.
Okay,
that's correct.
But then the Architectural Control Committee changes over years.
Well, it does, and then, you know, you get into an issue about whether this particular Architectural Control Committee is being reasonable in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fence is probably the best example. Let's say that you have your neighbor who has a fence and has had a fence for years, and you like their fence and you want to put up the same mm-hmm. type of fence, and the Architectural Control Committee says, no, we decided we're not going to allow fences anymore.
Anymore, yeah.
Well, what is our case law on that? What is our precedent? Well, the precedent deals with common scheme and plan.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what that means is that the association may restrict fences in this case, as long as they're acting reasonably consistent with the common scheme or plan in the subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a situation where there are multiple fences that are like the one you want as far as height, as mm-hmm. far as look, as far as size, and they've been allowed over the years, you have a very strong argument that the common scheme or plan in the development is to allow such fences.
Mm-hmm.
So in many cases, depending on the particular circumstances, you would be able to basically force the Architectural Control Committee to allow you to get what you want mm-hmm. with regard to that. You know, likewise, the Architectural Control Committee can certainly take a position that we're not going to allow whatever you want to do.
Right.
Because it's not consistent with our common scheme or plan that we've had in place for years.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to allow you to have an outbuilding of some sort that's not
those
connected.
Those get argued and,
There's a lot. There's not one anywhere. Yeah. We're not going to allow it. You know, those kind of things. Even if the covenants don't necessarily have that specific language in them, if we give the authority to the Architectural Control Committee or to some committee or to the board with regard to that, and they act consistent with the common scheme or plan, then in most cases their action is going to be enforceable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those are the, I mean, you mentioned the outbuilding. I know those are the ones that really get arguments over. But also things like, and imagine sometimes technology changes things, like a satellite dish or even a type of siding that's used.
Right.
Well,
no question with regard to that.
We have a caller on the line, Gene from Richlands. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, gentlemen. I live in a subdivision and there's a covenant, but it does not specifically mention no metal roofs. Mm-hmm. And it, for those of us that are interested in the new metal roofs, are we allowed to put them on?
Gene, thank you for the call. Does it say anything about the Architectural Control Committee has discretion with regard to roofing material, anything like that?
Roofing is not mentioned at all.
Well, I mean, is there an Architectural Control Committee mentioned?
No.
Okay.
Well, I would say that the likelihood that the association would not would have the authority to tell you cannot have a metal roof is very low. I would think that if the covenants do not mention materials as it relates to roof and does not and do not indicate that there's a particular committee who has the authority to make decisions with regard to the materials you use on your roof or otherwise on your home, I don't think the association would then, you know, have that authority to try to enforce that or keep you from using that material if that's what you want to use.
Okay, appreciate your time.
I think you're on the right side of that one, Gene.
Yeah, and you probably want to have somebody look over those covenants and make sure that you're on that side. Thanks, Gene.
Thank you.
Okay, that's a good call, though.
So Gene has a great question. I mean, you understand these situations. Where, I mean, what is she going to do now? Is she going to go put a $15,000-$20,000 metal roof on her house and then take a risk?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they decide that they're going to not allow it and they're going to try to fine her for having something on the property that is not approved. Is she going to do that? Or are we going to work this out? Maybe she gets an attorney and the attorney contacts them and says, you know, this is the law on this. You can't do this. And maybe we all come to an agreement. And then she's kind of going forward with a clean bill of health.
Right.
Probably
right.
need to try the second option first.
Yeah.
I think
well,
we
my,
have another question.
My question is this. If it's not mentioned in that guidelines, if it's not mentioned at all, does that make it okay? Or is that something that you should pose a question to first?
If it's not mentioned at all, it's not restricted.
Okay.
But we're dealing with human beings here on the board. And the human beings don't always act consistent with the law.
Yes.
However, they have power.
Mm-hmm.
So we do not want to put our genes of the world in a situation where they're adversarial or she's adversarial with the board.
Right.
We'd rather just diplomatically explain to the board, this is the law on this, and get approval that way.
There you go.
Let's deal with what our courts have required.
All right, we'll take another little break, and we'll be back in just a moment here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, always available for you at harvellandcollins.com. And also you can give them a call, set up that appointment at 252-726-9050, 252-726-9050. something that Gene brought up, we were kind of talking about a little bit in the break, was that advancements in building materials, different kinds, I mean, may catch sometimes a committee off guard.
Yeah, I mean, you may have covenants that are 20, 30, you know, sometimes 40 years old or even older, that may have specific restrictions about the use of certain building materials.
Mm-hmm.
Some subdivisions don't want vinyl siding, you know, for example, or maybe it is, you know, described as siding made out of a plastic type material.
Whatever. Right.
There are actually some very expensive type siding products that have over the years advanced to the point where they're probably about the nicest thing you could get, and it may be arguably
and look like
derived
wood.
Through some plastic process.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes homeowners associations certainly have to look at that and go through the process of amendment so as to keep up with the times.
Same thing with, you know, like decking materials now that are recycled. The decking materials, you have all kinds of. Then you may have a covenant that speaks to wood only.
That's right. You know, sometimes with fences, you do have, like, specific language, no chain link fences.
Mm-hmm.
Specificity with that, that's a good thing. Obviously, you know, we don't necessarily want to have chain link fences in a nice subdivision,
mm-hmm.
depending on the circumstances. I mean, that's a good example of something that's very specific.
Right.
We all
right.
know what a chain link fence is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's going to be a change in building materials, you know, over the years that all of a sudden a chain link fence becomes the cool thing. You know, I don't think they're going to start making gold chain link fences. That
well, I would imagine all kinds of things, even hurricane windows or, you know, the,
right.
the
shutters,
mm-hmm. Even tinted windows, all sorts of things that can come under the purview of that architectural control committee.
Right.
That can change over time.
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, when I sit down with a new client looking at a situation like this, I'm always very interested in the language in the covenants
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I've touched over the years, you know, close to 20 years of dealing with these cases, covenants of, I don't know, 100 different associations, if not 100, close to 100. And when you look at these covenants, you read through these covenants, it's interesting to see the different twists and turns that are shown in the covenants that
mm-hmm.
were done in 1975 or done in 1985 or 95 even or even older.
Yeah.
To see how, you know, what was of interest at that point in time and how they were written and how the cases in North Carolina, you know, may completely alter what can be done under these old sets of covenants.
Reviewing for a homeowners association to review their covenants, I mean, obviously to change them is got to be a difficult, but you can say the bar for amending may be different. Is that right?
Yeah, well, amendment, change, same thing. You always look to the covenants as it relates to the language
mm-hmm.
in the covenants about amending them. And normally you're going to have a 2/3 or 75%, sometimes 90%. Sometimes it's only one half, just depending on what the circumstances are. There is a mechanism, however, in the Planned Community Act that can be used with regard to amending covenants of 60, I think it's 67%,
mm-hmm.
Off the top of my head. And there's a, you know, certainly an argument about, you know, if the covenants have a higher number and this is a lower number, whether you can employ that.
Consulting an attorney is going to be perhaps a valuable first step. And you can call Harvell and Collins at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.